This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting live to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they live upon the earth, and certainly also important to all other peoples as well. We at DavidDuke.com and Euro, European American Unity and Rights Organization, believe that all people have the right to determine their own government, their own affairs, preserve their own culture and their own heritage. We don't believe in colonialism. We don't believe in massive immigration, ethnic cleansing, or oppression of anyone. We are opposed to those kinds of processes, and we believe that the world will be a better place if each people, every people, are allowed to pursue their own destiny, their own independence, just as the United States of America was founded on the principle of independence. The Declaration of Independence is, of course, our founding document in the United States of America. And we believe that principle is good for all people, and we believe in the preservation of all people. We are not supremacists. And we believe that the true supremacy, the true threat of a globalist supremacy, is emanating from the Zionist powers. Israel has been the source of more wars, conflict, and hatred than any other nation on the earth over the last 30, 40, 50 years. They have brutally oppressed the Palestinian people. They've invaded their neighbors. They have tortured hundreds of thousands. They have been damaging not just to the people of the Middle East, but also to the United States of America. It is Israel, that caused America to be involved in the Iraq War. Not just Israel, but Israeli partisans, Israeli loyalists, fifth columnists, if you would, who are in the United States, who steered American policy, not in the interest of our country, but in pursuit of the strategy of Israel. Now, this is plainly and easily demonstrated. You can look at the paper written by Richard Perle, one of the chief architects of the Iraq War, and David Wormser, and many others. They wrote a paper, not for the United States of America, but for Israel, talking about securing the realm. And it wasn't America's realm that they were securing. It was Israel's. And in that paper, they call for the invasion of Iraq, Syria, and Iran, and you can see that timetable, that process going on daily. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to begin to confront these issues. Israel has been a cancer in terms of the world's peace and security. There's no question in my mind that our policy in the Middle East, our support of Israeli crimes, led directly to the terrible tragedy, to the obscenity of 9/11. How many more 9/11s must America and the West face because of our support of the criminal behaviors of Israel? Recently in Lebanon, they killed at least 1,000 Lebanese civilians, and they devastated tens of thousands of Lebanese homes and businesses, ethnically cleansed great parts of that country, terrorized millions of people in that particular nation, destroyed the infrastructure of a country, not only that was not a terrorist country, Lebanon, but a country whose government was favorable to the United States of America, a government to whom we had great friendship and ties. And many Americans worked in Lebanon. 25,000 were employed in Lebanon. Many teachers, other types of educators, businessmen. We literally allowed, supported Israel's brutal attack on Lebanon, even while these 25,000 Americans resided there. Of course, Americans in general are so ignorant because of the press control, because of the incredible Zionist influence on the American press, which is easily proven. And you've probably already heard my audio book on Jewish supremacism, on Jewish media supremacy. Listen to that chapter again, or go to my website and read that chapter on Jewish media supremacy. And in that chapter, you'll see how they control and manipulate the American media with a control that's probably greater than you could even imagine. But we see a situation. We see a situation where Israel has even attacked the United States of America with terrorism and many other acts of treachery. In the Levant affair, they terroristically attacked American installations and tried to treacherously get us into a war with a nation that was innocent, that it was not doing these attacks. And Israel has since awarded the attackers, the terrorists who blew up American libraries and American movie theaters in Egypt, awarded these individuals with medals of honor. They attacked the American ship, the USS Liberty, in international waters in 1967. They have spied on us with the Jonathan Pollard case and did devastating damage to the American intelligence network in Europe, causing the death of many of Americans and operatives in Eastern Europe. They have not been a true ally to the United States of America. They have been actually a terrorist enemy, but they so control our media, they've allowed the manipulation of American policy to where we send billions of American tax dollars to a country that has attacked us with terrorism, ladies and gentlemen. I know this sounds odd, nobody talks about it, but the Levant affair can be proven. The USS Liberty attack. I'm not the only one that's saying that Israel attacked the USS Liberty. The Secretary of State of the United States of America at the time of the attack, Dean Rusk, he has said and says the same thing. Admiral Thomas Moore, who was, in fact, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, certainly a person as well as any other person in the United States, in a position to know whether the Israeli attack of 1967 on the Liberty was deliberate or not, he himself has said many, many times that there's no doubt of the fact that this attack was a deliberate, murderous surprise attack on an American ship. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to begin to confront this issue. Israel is at the heart of the problem. And today I'm going to continue my audio book of Jewish supremacism. And we're in chapter 9 on the origins of Israel. Israel as a Jewish racial supremacist state. And we're in part 2, and we will proceed with that chapter now. This is from my book, Jewish Supremacism, from chapter 9, Israel, a supremacist state. And we're going to go into the Balfour Declaration. We're talking about the origins of Israel. And the Balfour Declaration laid the foundation for Israel, and this is what we'll discuss first, and some other major issues in the foundation of what's called the Israeli state. This is from Jewish Supremacism, Chapter 9, and it's from the part on the Balfour Declaration. The First World War laid the political foundation of the Zionist state. Britain was having a tough time of it. For years, the war had droned on, causing horrendous loss of life. Despite oceans of spilled blood, the front lines had moved only a few kilometers back and forth on the Western Front. Jewish loyalties were somewhat divided during the war. Some Jews favored the Allies for business and other reasons. Others favored the Germans for the main reason that German success against Russia would weaken their longtime enemies, Imperial Russia and the Tsar. Just a decade earlier, financiers Jacob Schiff and Bernard Baruch led a campaign to finance the Japanese in the Russo-Japanese War, resulting in a defeat for Russia. Now, Jewish power brokers around the world hoped for an even more calamitous Russian defeat in the Great War to provide an opportunity to overthrow the Tsar and establish a Jewish Bolshevik government. The Germans, desperately fighting a war on two fronts, knew that a revolution in Russia might remove Russia from the war. Toward that end, Kaiser Wilhelm approved one of the most treacherous deeds in the annals of Western civilization. In his zeal to defeat Russia, his ministers assisted Lenin, Trotsky, and hundreds of other Bolshevik revolutionaries, mostly Jewish, to cross Germany in a sealed train toward Russia, allowing the Bolshevik terrorists and assassins access to Russia, unleashed the greatest period of human oppression, torture, and murder that the world has perhaps ever experienced. Britain and her allies fought to a stalemate against Germany, but as Russia weakened, the Allies knew that her defeat would allow the entire German army on the Eastern Front to almost double their army on the Western Front, dramatically tipping the military balance toward the Central Powers. Britain understood that it was critical that they bring the United States into the war on the Allies' side to counter the Russian collapse. Onto the stage of crisis stepped the British Lord Arthur Balfour. He met with the Rothschilds and made an agreement that in return for pledging Britain's support in the creation of a Jewish homeland in Palestine, that the Jews would use their great international power and influence to draw the United States into the war. Lord Balfour drew up a document, the Balfour Declaration, that called for a Jewish homeland. Even our popular encyclopedias admit the reason for the Balfour Declaration. This is from the Encarta Encyclopedia. It has been commonly accepted that the Balfour Declaration was a unilateral undertaking by the British government. The immediate purpose was to win for the Allied cause in World War I the support of Jews and others in the warring nations and in neutral countries such as the United States. Now read what David Lloyd George, Britain's wartime prime minister, wrote about the Balfour Declaration. Note his pointing out that the Jews of Russia had been the chief agents in the betrayal of the Russian war effort as well as the disintegration of Russian society, later recognized as the revolution. Russian Jews had been secretly active on behalf of the Central Powers from the first. By 1917, they had done much in preparing for that general disintegration of Russian society, later recognized as the revolution. It was believed that if Great Britain declared for the fulfillment of Zionist aspirations in Palestine under their own pledge, one effect would be to bring Russian Jewry to the cause of the Entente. It was believed also that such a declaration would have a potent influence upon world Jewry outside Russia and secure for the Entente the aid of Jewish financial interests. In America, their aid in this respect would have a special value when the Allies had almost exhausted the gold and marketable securities available for American purchase. Such were the chief considerations which, in 1917, impelled the British government toward making a contract with Jewry. Unquote. Samuel Lanman, in his book Great Britain, the Jews in Palestine, confirms the Jewish role in bringing America into the war. Lanman, a leading Zionist and secretary of the Zionist Organization from 1917 to 22, confirms from the Jewish perspective exactly what Lloyd George says. Quote, "The only way, which proved so to be, to induce the American president to come into the war was to secure the cooperation of Zionist Jews by promising them Palestine and thus enlist and mobilize the hitherto unsuspectingly powerful forces of Zionist Jews in America and elsewhere in favor of allies on a quid pro quo contract basis." Unquote. Some of the President Wilson's top advisors during the period were the Jewish Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, Rabbi Stephen Wise, and the powerful bank and international financier of New York City, Bernard Baruch. Although Wilson had campaigned for president on the slogan, "He kept us out of the war," once the Balfour Declaration was proposed, Jewish influence quickly pushed him to an interventionist path. When Balfour came to the United States in May 1917 in hopes of pulling America into the war, he ignored the U.S. State Department, which, by the way, created much resentment, and met with Brandeis, who had no authority to speak on foreign relations. The Jewish protagonists for war were also aided in their jingoism by a number of American magnates who saw American participation in the European conflict as writing a blank check for the military-industrial complex. The press that was Jewish-owned or Jewish-controlled agitated unashamedly for war, running lurid tales of German atrocities and promoting stories that Germany planned to invade the United States through Mexico, even though in 4 years of war it had been unable to even take Paris. In short order, the Germans, although racially and morally no different than British and Americans, were labeled Huns and baby killers. The Allies, despite Britain's and France's non-democratic foreign empires, were said to be fighting for, quote, democracy. Even though Germany had electoral institutions similar to those of the Allies, it was called tyrannical. The two prominent slogans for the greatest and bloodiest war in all of history were, quote, the war to make the world safe for democracy, and incredibly, the war to end war. If those were truly the Allied objectives of the First World War, it's easy to see the fruits of their victory as the 20th century closed and the 21st century began. Democracy around the world still seems to be in precious short supply, and war since 1918 has been a thriving business. Most historians now agree that the First World War was not the result of aggression or dictatorship or any sinister force other than entangling alliances structured to preserve the balance of power. Essentially, it was promoted by nothing but national fears and bravado. For most of the internecine conflict, America sensibly stayed out of this war's insanity. But finally, Jewish power, whose concern, as always, was only its own interests, tipped the scales for war. After all, what were the lives of a few hundred thousand young Americans compared to the interests of the chosen? The media keeps Americans blind to the Jewish influence in our participation in the First World War, just as they cloaked the pivotal Jewish involvement in the Russian Revolution. The world didn't even learn until 1999 that the person working with Lord Balfour was actually a Jew, and that while ostensibly working for Britain's interest, he was secretly working on behalf of the World Zionist Organization. Even this day, to this day, few Americans are aware of the preeminent Jewish influence directly resulting in America's involvement in the First World War. The Balfour Declaration was innocuous sounding enough, and it took pains to state, and I quote, that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. The Zionists, though, did not want a homeland containing a significant non-Jewish community. From the outset, they were determined not to set up a multicultural, pluralistic democracy that they were so busy planning for America and the rest of the European world. They wanted a chauvinistic, ethno-religious, purely Jewish state. But they could not reveal this until they had attained power in Palestine. Among themselves, though, they made clear their intentions to create an ethnic state, one amazingly similar to the nation they most hated, Nazi Germany. Well, folks, that's the end of part 2 of chapter 9, Israel, a supremacist state. And in the next part, we will go into the incredible alliance that existed between early Zionism and Nazism in Germany. And also we go into some of the ideological foundations of the Israeli state. Fascinating stuff. Well, I look forward to being with you tomorrow. Please remember that your support and your work really enables my work to reach more people. If you like what I'm doing, if you find this enjoyable, if you find this book valuable, please give us some financial support, give us some other moral and tangible support. Get this material out to your neighbors, to your friends. And with the Internet, you can do that on a worldwide basis. Appreciate you very much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow with the third part of the first chapter on Israel in my book, Jewish Supremacism. Look forward to being with you. Until then, God bless and take care.
This has been a David Duke
worldwide web radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddu.com.